Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp, part of the District of Wonders Network, featuring Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, and Crime City Central. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp. This week, we have an extra for episode 65, an interview with our story's author, J.C. Hemphill, conducted by our editor, Fred Heimbaugh. So if you haven't heard it yet, I'd recommend you listen to the story first, then come back. Otherwise, let's hear what inspired the Island Trovar. Fred?
Welcome, Pulpsters. This is Fred Heimbaugh, editor of the podcast, and with me now is J.C. Hemphill, the author of the story you just heard. J.C., welcome.
Hey, thank you.
Well, this story is absolutely drenched in pulp fiction ambiance. And tell me, what is your relationship to pulp fiction?
Well, it's actually a little more distant than you might think. I've only recently started getting into the pulp genre. Growing up, I read a lot of Jack London, H.P. Lovecraft, but that's about the extent that my pulp background went into. So when I started writing the story, I wanted to do something that was in that area, but it wasn't something I was real familiar with. So I started reading up on it, Edgar Rice Burroughs and Block and Joe Lansdale, who, you know, I absolutely adore. And so more recently is when I've really been getting into pulp. And I don't know if I pulled it off real well, but I did my best with this story, and I hope it got.
Yeah, I loved it. And, you know, I can completely respect that. We're very welcoming of latecomers and late bloomers to the pulp genre, because that's what I am. You know, this podcast was started by our glorious founder, Tony C. Smith, who began with the science fiction podcast Starship Sofa, and then branched out with a crime podcast, a horror podcast, and then he wanted a pulp podcast. And he, just based on my feeble contributions to Starship Sofa, asked me if I wanted to edit it. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. What exactly is pulp fiction? And, you know, and so, so here we are. And you really began with the urge the feeling, you said, I'm going to write a pulp story and I'm just going to figure out what that might be. And then you went from there. I mean, so you weren't thinking islanders and cannibals and natives and palm trees.
Kind of. The way this story started was actually kind of funny. I was listening to a podcast and I misheard a word. I don't remember what the correct word was, but I heard Trovar, and just images sprang up with that word. I don't know why. Can't explain it. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I had this whole island in mind, with this whole dark past and the great dead god that kind of commands the people that live there. And it felt really pulpy to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could put it in a more modern sense, but I didn't think it would do it justice. It wouldn't come out right. I really felt like it was just a pulp idea. And so, like I said, I started researching that and just trying to get the feel of what that type of story needed to be. And that's when I really started getting into pulp. It's a genre that I didn't realize really extends into today. There's a lot of influence that you start to see all over the place.
Oh, well, yeah. And, you know, I used the term genre just a minute ago, but mm-hmm. that's not really right because
right.
It's a sensibility or it's a time period. I think when we first started with this podcast, Dave Robison was the first host, and he got connected with somebody who said, well, you know, pulp people understand that, you know, it's pulp magazines, it's the low cost, you know, the blue collar, and people get that, but it's also, it's men's literature, it's men's interests. Overwhelmingly, yeah. there are women's pulp stories, and in fact, we've run one or two on this podcast, but it's really all about men's interests, men's obsessions, men's neuroses, men's passions, and everything else. So it's, you know, it's got the crime, it's got the horror, it's got the fight stories or the exotic locales. I guess probably what's great about this story and why something like Trovar or of course the Indiana Jones movies, why those scream pulp at you is because the exotic locale, the very alien, the very other natives, the strange people and the strange gods and the strange flora and fauna, all that is pulp in a way that doesn't really map to any other genre. So I just spoke for 2 minutes without asking a question. And I don't know if you have a reaction to that.
Well, no, that's fine. You're absolutely right. pulp is something that kind of just extends into all the genres. You've got Philip K. Dick, who I would consider pulp.
Yes.
You've also got Robert Bloch and H.P. Lovecraft, who are very different from PKD.
Yeah. And we've run them all on this podcast.
Right, right. And you've got great authors that everybody in the world knows, like Jack London. Mm-hmm. A lot of his stuff is pulpy. Like you said, it's definitely a man's area at certain times. A lot of it has that rough and tough main character.
Yes.
That you don't necessarily find everywhere, but mm-hmm. Absolutely, I completely agree with that.
There is, I don't know if there are other, would the word be antecedents or inspirations for you, particular stories or movies in exotic locales that you can think of?
You know, I've always been drawn to prison movies or stories.
Oh.
And in that, and in its own way, that's an exotic locale. You know, it's certainly not something that the average person sees on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think about a lot when I'm writing is like Stephen King's work with Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh,
that's a story I absolutely love, and it's not necessarily pulpy, but that's where a lot of my influence comes from. Is I think about the way authors can take a rough situation that most people would have a negative point of view of, like prison, and you know, an author can make that an emotional thing. They can make it something that people who have never been to prison can connect with and understand. And so that's something I try to strive for in my fiction. You can take a crazy world, you know, the island Trovar, and you can put normal characters into that, and you can kind of feel it through them, even though it's something you've never experienced yourself.
Yeah, well, definitely the island becomes a prison at some point in the story.
Right.
So there's absolutely a direct connection there.
Yeah.
You know, there is an old show that has lurked in my memory. I'm old enough to remember Saturday morning kids television from the late 1960s. And there was a variety show called The Banana Splits. It was sort of a knockoff of the Monkees, in that the Banana Splits were a pop combo that was created purely for a television show, except they were never able to escape and become a real band like the Monkees were, because they were four guys in animal costumes. So they were pretty much stuck to the show. But that doesn't matter. What was interesting, though, is a variety show. And they had a continuing, it was a multi-episode cliffhanger serial, live action, and it was called Danger Island. And you're humming like it's obviously a new thing to you. It's pretty obscure. And I couldn't tell you what the plot of the thing is. Apparently they filmed 3 hours of this thing and it was broken up into 5-minute segments. So it must have gone on and on and on. I just remember seeing bits and pieces of it, never in any order, and always being very confused about what the plot was. But it was some people searching for this lost city of Tobanya. As soon as you were mentioning that Trovar was your starting point, you know, that name, I just made me, I wanted to be sure and Google that Tobanya, because I want to get that right. But it looks like Danger Island is on YouTube. So everybody listening to me who have any, if you have any interest at all in the history of South Pacific Islands as settings for pulp stories, should check it out. And here's the thing. There were several tribes and there were these explorers and they were looking for this lost city. And I think there was supposed to be a treasure, or maybe it was a lost city itself, but it was an actual treasure hunt. I mean, they would find a clue and then that clue would give them information to go to find the next clue. So it was very contrived, a little bit, kind of Dan Brown-esque in that sense. But there was one tribe called the Headhunters, or were they called the Headhunters? But they had skeletons painted on their bodies. So that was the whole, that's connection right there. So when I'm reading Trovar, I am getting flashbacks to Danger Island. You might want to look at it, you know, even just watch 1 5-minute episode. But
definitely.
You know how those earliest memories, you know, going back to like 5 or 6, you know, those memories, there's something that just stirs really deep emotions. And so that story, your story was definitely doing that for me. I'm curious, the magic, you know, for the reader, you don't know where the story's going. And then at some point you cross the line and say, okay, yeah, this is a magic story. These people are dealing with powers unexplained. Was that all? Did you know from the beginning that this was going to be a magic story?
No. I'm a writer who doesn't really plot. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those guys who gets a flash or an image or a name like Trovar, and I just sit down and I don't know. It comes out of space and I think that's why so much what I write is speculative, because the whole writing process feels like magic to me.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you sit down and you put some characters on paper and somehow they come together in a conclusion.
Yeah.
It may not be the conclusion you want, but it's a conclusion of some sort. And I don't, you know, I can't explain where that comes from. It's pretty amazing. So I think that's with Trovar. I sat down and I knew I was going to write something pulp. I did some research. I did research on flora, fauna, the language of the time, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I just sat out writing it. And at one point, when I realized, oh, hey, these guys are going to be tied up and bound, what crazy thing can I, you know, put them in? And so the whole magical part where Resh starts ushering this guy's bone structure from his body, that just kind of happened as I was going.
Yeah. Well, that's compelling. And, you know, the thing I like about this story the most is, I don't know if you've thought about this much, but, you know, at the end where the hero assumes the mantle, you know, takes up the scepter, which is basically almost literally, and you can treat that as this is the fulfillment, this is this man's destiny. He had no idea, but almost like the power, the magic was drawing him to this island, and now he is fulfilling, he has become what he was always meant to be. Or you can think that, like, he got sucked into some really creepy cult. And, you know, this is, you know, he's living a nightmare and he doesn't even know it. And I don't know if maybe you shouldn't comment on which side you prefer, because maybe you want to leave the listener, you know, in a state where they can decide where they want to go.
I'm a big believer in the reader making their own conclusions.
Yeah.
I love stories where it doesn't tell you what happened. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of left, well, I can see it this way, or I can see it that way. I choose to see it this way.
Yeah.
I think that really involves the reader a lot more.
I think you've given, it's not like one of those cheesy things where they just decide to omit the ending. But you've given us all the information, but we still get to decide. So,
right. Was it fate, or was it just happenstance, or what, you know?
Yeah, and it, you know, and maybe it is fate, and is fate on our side? Does fate love us,
right?
Or is fate just using us?
Is that a good?
However, you know, for its own purposes, you know, kind of a Lovecraftian, you know, the gods really don't care one bit for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you mentioned reading Lovecraft from the beginning. I was reading Lovecraft before this podcast began, but, you know, it was maybe 5 years ago that I read my first Lovecraft story, but I was not growing up with that at all.
Well, I think Lovecraft has really just recently started entering the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing it in Guillermo del Toro's work, and he talks about it all the time. He loves Lovecraft.
And so I
think it, you know, a lot of us weren't introduced to that just because he didn't have that status of Poe.
The H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast, I don't know if you've ever listened to that, but that's those two guys really bring Lovecraft to life.
Yeah, they do.
They're great. And, of course, anyone who's listening who doesn't know that podcast should check it out. However, please remain subscribed to Protecting Project Pulp.
Only if you have extra time.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been a very interesting discussion, and we were thrilled to run your story.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm thrilled to hear it in podcasts. You guys do a great job, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for that, Fred and JC. Check the show notes for links to JC's site and a refresher for anyone wondering about the banana splits. Let us know in the comments if you'd like to hear more interviews and extras on the show, and have a great week.
This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.